is on the line, which is very exciting. I'm all a Twitter or something. All right, Groovehouse.
He never hears that.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm sure he never does. I will refrain from any future lame jokes for our guest. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have on the phone, or do we have our guest on the phone? Am I right?
He will be on right now.
All right.
This is Ev.
Hi, Ev.
Hello, Ev. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Fine. This is you're on Technology Bites. We're a radio show in Houston, Texas, devoted to helping people with their personal computers, and we occasionally do interviews, and you're one of them tonight. And
great.
I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I know it was hassle getting through your schedule, so I appreciate the effort to,
not a problem.
To do it. We are all big fans of Twitter here, and we all use it relatively heavily, I think, except for Flicted. And so I think one of the first questions that we'd like to know about from you is this. You started Twitter in 2007, and it was it started initially as working with text messaging. But if someone had come to you and said, 5 years later, or rather 3 years later in 2010, that this is what it would look like, is this what you expected in kind of your grandest dreams? Is this what you thought it would be? Or if not, what were you thinking it would be?
What were you thinking?
It's hard to say what we were thinking at the time. You know, we actually started the product in 2006, and then we started the company in 2007. It started as a side project at my previous company, and we just thought it was kind of an interesting, fun thing. We had no idea. You know, you get a glimpse that something has potential, and having worked on Blogger for a long time, there are a lot of the same elements that, kind of gave me a gut feeling it might work. But what that means at the grand scale is just like that. I don't even know what we're thinking at the time, but I guarantee it wasn't what we're looking at today.
When you were when you did start it, and it, I believe it started out of your you were working on Odeo, right?
That's right.
At the time, and you said it was just kind of a basic fun thing.
Yep.
There was some indication that you had, probably as a result of Blogger, that person-to-person communication seemed important to you, and you thought seemed important on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
And Twitter has become kind of a social phenomenon and a social driver. Was there any of that kind of in the background of it at the time?
Oh, sure. what I had spent most of my career doing is helping people express themselves and helping people exchange information and lowering the barrier really to publishing. And when we started Twitter, we thought, well, the new thing we're doing here is mostly about, we're bringing it to mobile via text messaging. And, we didn't know everything else that was unique about Twitter, but it was definitely very much along the lines of helping people express themselves, helping people connect, and doing the same types of things as both myself and my co-founder Biz Stone had been doing with Blogger and his previous company, which was also a blogging company.
Tell me, I want to ask you about, obviously at the top level, being the founder of Twitter, you're probably not as hands-on into the customer care aspect of it, but I would imagine that Twitter must have a large customer care department to deal with litigation, deal with people's complaints about how people are using Twitter. There's new things are being defined by this medium probably every day.
Mm-hmm.
So how what kind of a team or what kind of a infrastructure do you use to deal with that?
There's actually two teams. There's a support and what we call trust and safety, and they're both phenomenal groups in Twitter that are extremely dedicated people who work right in our office in San Francisco. We don't outsource it. The support folks are, as you might expect, answering people's questions or creating documentation. The trust and safety group is all about protecting users. So dealing with abuse, dealing with complaints, everything from trademark to harassment to suicides to you name it. And, with millions of users, crazy things happen every day. And both those teams actually have their own engineers dedicated to those teams. So, and with the number of users we have, you know, we could throw a million people at just answering their emails every day. So we have to do as much as we can to serve their needs through technology. And so we have dedicated software teams actually writing tools for those teams.
What was the moment in pop culture and, you know, in the media when you realized that something was happening with Twitter? I mean, you hear it referenced on TV all the time. Mm-hmm. It's getting mentioned by musicians that are, you know, on stage, maybe even live tweeting while they're doing. Was there a moment when you were watching TV or listening to the radio or at a concert or something when you just kind of went, ah?
Yeah, there's been, you know, a bunch of moments. It still catches my attention if someone mentions it in a drama or some fiction show I'm watching, but probably at the nadir of it was when I went on Oprah, which was a couple years ago, and actually maybe it was just a year and a half ago, and it was in April 2009, and that was when we were just seeing this growth in media attention that was just mind-blowing every day. And was during that time that Ashton Kutcher was having his race with CNN to get to a million followers, and we got a call from Oprah's people and said, hey, we're going to do a show about Twitter, or at least a segment about Twitter. We're going to have Ashton on, and I was on this call along with some people, and they were just asking questions. They wanted sort of technical help. And then on this call, they said, you know what, maybe it'd be good if someone from Twitter was actually here in the studio in case anything comes up. And you know, we were a team of probably 35 people at the time, the whole company. But I thought, well, heck, this is Oprah. And I just said it right away, yeah, of course, we'll send someone. And then they got to thinking more still on the call. I was like, maybe it should be, you know, one of the founders. And I said, well, okay, I'll come. And this was on a Wednesday, and the show was on a Friday. And then, so I booked my ticket to go out there Thursday night. And then Thursday morning, I get a call that says, actually, you're going to be on the show. So I'm like, oh, I'm on Oprah tomorrow. And then, so my wife and I flew out there. I made sure to get her a ticket for the audience. We flew out. We arrive at like 2 a.m., turn on CNN, and Anderson Cooper is begging everybody watching CNN to go follow CNN on Twitter. I'm like, what world? Am I having some sort of bizarro dream? I've just worked at this technology company in San Francisco. It was very, very strange.
You know, the growth of Twitter and its entrance into the collective consciousness has been astounding, particularly just, I mean, even since that 2009 era that you're talking about, when it kind of became a media darling, and since then you have changed up Twitter quite a bit. You've revamped the page so mm-hmm. that it looks a lot different. It's a lot more useful, mm-hmm. And it's somewhat more controversial, I think, in its current design. How much of what you're doing now is a response to kind of the popularization of Twitter in the culture? I mean, is that driving and affecting what you do day to day?
It affects what we do, but mostly in the sense of there's more and more users, and we learn things from those users. It's, and a lot of the things, the changes you've seen most recently with new Twitter, with our mobile apps, other product changes we've made, are things we've actually wanted to do for years. And the great thing about the point we're in right now with Twitter is we finally have the team that can make these product improvements. And it wasn't like we thought the product was perfect before and we just, and now the market's changed. It's that, oh my gosh, we need to make it easier. We want to make it faster. We want to make it do all these things. Showing pictures is something, you know, we talked about from the beginning. And now we're just actually doing them. So what's the nice thing actually though about it, having been out there a couple years with all these users, is that we can make better decisions based on all the input and data we see about how people use Twitter. So we can actually, we think, make the right changes, even though change is always hard and, as you mentioned, somewhat controversial.
What do you think of the new features on the new Twitter page? What seems to have been the most effective at letting people communicate with each other? Is there one particular part of the new page that's most popular?
Well, one of the things that has had a dramatic impact and touches on one of the biggest pain points of Twitter, we launched slightly before new Twitter, which is the Who to Follow module,
right.
Which is actually kind of controversial in itself. Some people really, really don't want us to suggest who they might follow, but the vast majority of users really appreciate it and end up following a lot of people from that, and the algorithm's getting better and better, so the recommendations are spot on in many cases. And what's that? And the reason we thought that was so important is because we knew from our data and from talking to users that just the biggest problem with for people, especially when they're getting started, is who the heck's on here? Why do I care about Twitter? You care because there's information sources, people, or companies or what have you who you want to follow, but how you find them has always been a big weakness. And we still want to work on that more, especially for people who are brand new. But for people who are sort of engaged, where the Who to Follow module actually has enough data to make recommendations, it works really, really well, and those people find Twitter gets better, more valuable for them all the time because of it.
One of the early complaints about that Who to Follow was that it was recommending people either that you had blocked
right.
in some cases or had unfollowed.
Right.
I saw one person complaining that his ex-wife kept popping up in there, and there was a reason why he didn't
yeah,
follow her.
That
so
totally makes sense.
Have you changed that? Is that one of
yeah,
the...
Yeah, well, it's showing people that you've blocked was totally just a bug. I say just a bug. It was an annoying bug, but it certainly wasn't by design. And that is fixed. And it's showing people who you had already chosen to unfollow was sort of unavoidable because we didn't keep a history of everyone you've unfollowed. But what it does do is if you hit the X once when it suggested it, it should now never show you that person again. So hopefully it's short-term pain, not long-term pain. There have been some glitches in it, but that have caused some of the annoyance. But in general, it definitely shouldn't do that by design.
And you just started using widgets on the new Twitter homepage. Is that correct?
Which part are you referring to?
Well, there was the module that was made available involving the micro loan company. I saw this on a Read-Write Web story tonight. I stumped
him. Don't embarrass him.
You know what? we do have some widgets available on the site that have, and we're revamping them as possible. Oh, you're talking to about the Kiva thing.
Yes, Kiva. Uh-huh.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, that's one of the cool things about new Twitter that we hope to do more of is, as you know, if you click on a tweet now with a photo or video and more and more cases will show it in what we call the detail pane there on the right. Mm-hmm. We also launched new Twitter with a couple other sources when, if linked to, would bring up extra information. One of them's Kiva, the microloan company, and one of them's Kickstarter, which is a cool startup that helps people raise money around certain projects. And in those cases, we'll actually recognize, hey, this is a link to Kiva. Let's pull in. It's sort of like a picture, but it's actually a picture along with some other information. And the goal of that is to give more people more information more efficiently. So instead of having to click that link and you don't know what's on that other side of that Kiva page, you can just see a mini version of it very quickly.
As the co-founder of one of the largest technological innovations of our time, what do you see on the horizon coming up as an emerging technology for, you know, the not too distant future besides Twitter?
Oh gosh,
are you have opportunity to even pay attention?
Yeah, yeah. What have you seen on the horizon that you like in social media?
Well, one of the trends, you know, I'm heads down on Twitter the vast majority of time, so I'm probably not the best person to ask that to. But one of the trends that I've been fascinated with for a while is the whole idea of personal analytics, and it seems obvious that everybody is going to have more and more streams of data about themselves that is collected either automatically or that they have some service that they put this data into. And I'm talking about things like Blippi is one example it's a stream of data what you purchase. You guys familiar with Blippi?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So disclaimer, I'm an investor in Blippi and it's
really cool.
Friend. But the reason I invest in it is because that data is so valuable. And it may not be the case that everybody wants to share all their purchases, even with a small group of people. But even having that data for yourself in a form that you can use and learn things from is incredibly valuable, I think. And another company I'd put in the same bucket that I'm a big fan of is Fitbit, which is a little device that you can wear that tracks how many steps you take a day and basically how much movement you go through, and you can keep more analytics about what you eat and all this stuff. And I think this, like, getting more data, I mean, if you run a company or you guys know you're just even running your computer, you need data to know how it's doing. And if you're running blind, it's so hard to fix problems. That's in fact one of the biggest issues with Twitter early on, why we had so many reliability problems, was because we hadn't instrumented the servers or the service so we could know what was actually breaking when it broke. And that was a long process of actually building in the instrumentation so we could know exactly what was going on and address the real problem. I think you take that analogy and apply it to people's daily lives. Say, if we can collect all this data and actually present it in useful ways, people could learn a lot about themselves and each other that in ways that hopefully make their lives better.
How could something like that manifest itself in Twitter?
I'm not sure. I think it's of course, most of these services do integrate with Twitter.
Right.
So, Blippi, you can easily send stuff to Twitter. And Twitter is kind of this catch-all for information people are sharing, which is a bit of a challenge, of course, as well, because then we have to deal with, is this too much data? Do I care about this data, especially if it's from mm-hmm. someone else? That's one of our long-term challenges, though, that we take very seriously. And I think the for years at Twitter, we will be trying to figure out how do we deal with this increasingly just infinite seeming amount of data. We're getting almost 100 million tweets a day now.
Hmm.
And I could see that growing in order of magnitude in a short amount of time. And obviously that's a challenge on the technology side, but it's going to be a challenge. We want to design the system so it will actually be an antidote to information overload, just not a source of information overload.
One of the things I think that is really intriguing about Twitter is that you're adding these features. It becomes more useful, but it continues to stay simple. And I think that's a lure, certainly for me as a user. I much prefer it over Facebook, which seems overly complex. How do you balance that?
Yeah, I'm glad you noticed that, because we spend a tremendous amount of time trying to figure out how we make it more valuable, build in more functionality without making it more complicated. And we have a crack team of designers and product managers who, along with our engineers, spend eons of time trying to figure that stuff out. So with new Twitter, specifically, when we first showed, hey, we're going to be showing more information, and some people said, well, you're making Twitter more complicated. And our argument, and I think the truth is, we are adding things to Twitter, but we're actually taking steps. We're reducing things from an overall experience. So if you there's actually fewer steps to do the same thing. So to use the picture example again, even though we have pictures in Twitter and we didn't before, what we're saving you from is launching a new browser window and dealing with all the navigation around the picture and then closing that browser window to go back to Twitter. So that is a more complicated experience, even though we added something. And so in a lot of cases in new Twitter, we've done that. So the infinite scroll is just a simple one where we took out the more button at the bottom. You can just keep going forever. so that was adding technology, but actually taking something out of the interface and out of the things that a user has to do.
How far back is the infinite scroll? If you're storing 100 million tweets a day, do you guys keep everything from the very inception, or do you start dumping records at some point? Like, how far back can you search?
We keep all the tweets that have ever been made, and we will forever. We definitely want the historic record. In fact, we've even given an archive of the historic record to the Library of Congress, who asked for it. But they're not all easily accessible on the site, as they should be. And the reason for that is because in order to make things fast, we need to put things, basically cache a lot of stuff in, and the way we do that is we just limit how far back you can go. And then the other stuff is there, and we hope to make it more easily accessible at some point, but,
Did he get that?
Is the pizza there?
That's like the
I'm in a hotel room, so hopefully they'll just go away.
I wanted to share. We use IRC during the show to allow our listeners to participate with us on the show, and we jokingly refer to that as the original Twitter. But Jim Searles on IRC says, yeah, I've never listened to At EV before, but for someone who wants the world to communicate in 140 characters, he gives reasonably fulfilling answers.
I didn't know if that was going to end good or
I probably wouldn't have shared it if it ended too badly.
Well, I know that you have a limited amount of time. I do want to do one thing. I had asked on Twitter, I said that we were going to be interviewing you and asked if there were any folks had any questions. I don't want to throw a couple of them at you.
Sure.
That's okay. Bud the teacher wants to know if you're ever going to restore the see all messages option.
In the direct messages.
See all at messages option.
See all at messages.
At some point in new Twitter, you have it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was one of the controversial changes we made. There are no plans to restore that. Just to explain it for people who might not know, we had an option a long time ago that said in your main timeline, if someone does an at reply, you know, there's a heuristic in there right now that a lot of people actually don't understand. If a tweet starts with an at username, you only see it in your main timeline if you're following the person being replied to.
Mm-hmm.
And we think that's a pretty elegant way to let people have conversations and not have a lot of out-of-context information. But we had an option at one time that said, no, show me those anyway, even if I don't follow the person. And that wasn't the default. But we took out that option because a very small minority of people used it. And we also believe in making a uniform experience is helpful for everybody. Not that options are bad, but they add complexity to the system. And it actually, we found a lot of people didn't even at reply because they thought people would see it out of context. And sometimes they did. It was just this confusing part of Twitter, and it was hard to maintain, and very few people used it. And we just thought that it was a mistake. We thought the product shouldn't do this. I know some people like it, and it was controversial to take out, but we don't have plans to put it back in at this time.
Okay.
So that's the answer.
Right. And then one more from S.J. Rosas, and you've had this question probably a few times in the last few days. Where's the Apple love for Twitter? Tweety 2 for Mac.
Yes, I've had this question a lot lately. Tweety 2.
And you can add me to it, because I love Tweety for Mac. At the very least, what I want to see in it, an update to it that lets it support lists. But go ahead.
Yeah. So we bought the company and made, but Lauren Brichter, who's an amazing developer, made Tweety for Mac and Tweety for iPhone himself. And we brought him onto the Twitter team about 6 months ago in order to make Tweety for iPhone, Twitter for iPhone. And he's been doing an amazing job working with the mobile team and improving Twitter for iPhone. And since then, we've launched Twitter for iPad, who he's the main developer on that as well. And so our goal is we need to support the products. We would love to invest more in Tweety for Mac as well. It's just we have limited resources. And if we do that, then it will take away from the iPad work, the iPhone work, and we think those are more important for us at this time. So there could be more information still to come on Tweety for Mac, but that's a tough choice we have to make for now.
Speaking of that, do you know the statistics on how Twitter is being accessed in terms of percentage for mobile devices versus the web interface or
yes.
dedicated apps?
Yeah. So a couple stats on that I can share. One is that about 40% of tweets are created on mobile devices now, which is astonishing to me because obviously it's a little bit more difficult to create tweets on mobile devices, and a lot of tweets not on mobile devices are automated, or at least from things like Twitter feed. So that is a tremendous amount of use, and that's grown a lot over the last year. And probably even a higher, and I don't know this percentage off the top of my head, even probably a higher amount of the consumption is happening on mobile today. I also know about 50% of users use mobile at least part of the time. So a lot of them, of course, do use desktop. Some only use mobile, but about half the people are at least using some either our mobile website or a client. Awesome. And that number has been growing like crazy in the last year.
Hmm. At a deeper level at the company, one thing I was curious about is capacity. You know, coming on a show like this, you could get 20 or 30 new people signing up with Twitter, which isn't going to affect it. But you also could have somebody, you don't have somebody sign up, you know, a celebrity or just a lot of people signing up with Twitter from an event mm-hmm. where the audience would grow dramatically, measurably. Do you just have lots of excess capacity that's online, or are you watching that and you have things waiting in the wing to bring on, or how is that managed?
Yeah, it's extremely complex. It's a good question. We have, of course, an entire team of people dedicated to the hardware side of things, and we work with some partners there. And unfortunately, we don't ever have as much excess capacity to bring online as we'd like. It's always a challenge to get enough capacity to serve our current needs. And that's been the source of some of our problems. You guys may have seen we're building out a data center right now of our own. And the goal of that is to create a lot of excess capacity so that we can definitely keep up with growth. And the way it works right now is it's sort of, you know, just managed on databases. The nice thing is, unlike, you know, there were times when Macworld would cause our servers to melt, and every major event would be like, oh, we weren't prepared for that. Today, the general usage is big enough that there are very few events that can really cause a dent. It's more of a steady growth that we're trying to, which is a lot easier to manage.
So you didn't see much from, or see a spike today from the Apple announcement, for example?
I wasn't in the office today and hadn't checked the numbers, but I highly doubt it. We don't really see spikes from that kind of event anymore. Something like, you know, the World Cup, you know, was created some spikes, key games in there, the Super Bowl, that type of thing will, but at this point pretty much beyond the Apple announcement causing a dent.
Well, and that probably is one of the best signs that Twitter is indeed reaching the mainstream. If the geeks can't knock it offline anymore.
Right.
No fanboy pull.
Right.
Well, is it also maybe getting more efficient where, for instance, at a Mac thing in the past, everybody and their brother would live tweet it individually, where now it's gotten to where there's sort of people are clustered more, where there's, you know, 100,000 following, you know, at Gizmodo or something along those lines?
That's
are you seeing that? Or?
Yeah, maybe. I haven't seen the data on that. I would guess in general there's still more people talking about it at least than there used to be, but I don't know the data on that.
Well, Ev,
last question. Okay. When's the Twitter movie coming out, or is it going to be a short?
well, my Hollywood contacts aren't returning my calls right now, so.
I think maybe Twitter, you can get on Funny or Die.
We'll see. We'd definitely be much more of a comedy than that drama.
Dude, where's my tweets?
Yeah, Wes Anderson. That's your
Wes Craven.
Oh, Wes Craven. There we go. All right, Ev. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to join us. It was an excellent conversation.
My pleasure, guys.
Have a good evening. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was just spiffy.
That was spiffy. It was damn dapper, as a matter of fact.
I wonder, you know, I didn't want to bring it up necessarily, put him on the spot, but, you know, one of the questions I have is how Twitter is going to ever make money.
Well, they're working on that. They've now started to monetize it with the promoted tweets, and they sell their data.
But I was thinking that Ev could sell. I mean, you know how many followers you might pick up if Ev did you
want
a mention or a follow Friday? If, you know, because
there's been talk about Twitter selling followers. There's been some discussion about that. And I don't think it necessarily, you know, from the sound of it, they understand the value of kind of keeping it pure, and I don't think you would see them doing
that. You shouldn't opt in, but there is something to be said for, like, the Oprah kind of pull that, you know, someone like Ev or someone, you know,
right,
at Twitter could have as far as attracting more followers, just
right,
with a simple mention.
Well, you know, just because, like, when Leo Laporte, you know, mentioned us, you know, I picked up a few followers. I'm sure Dwight picks up followers when he's on the show.
I get about, the first time I was on there, I must have gotten about 1,000 followers when I was on This Week in Tech, and now when I'm on like every 6 weeks or so, and I get about 100 to 200 followers as a result of that.
So what's your total? I haven't looked at your Twitter thing.
I'm like 11,150 or something.
Oh, we've
got to
get you in a race with Ashton Kutcher.
Well, if you notice that Ev's following is, he has quite a few followers.
1,300,000, something like that, or 275,000.
It's funny because what is 1,284 a percentage of 1,257,000? It's like 0.01% he follows
right
back.
Right.
I should have asked him, out of all the people he follows, who doesn't follow him back that pisses him off or makes him angry? You know, you should follow me. I admit.
And then he thought about forcing them to.
Oh, yeah. What if he could go in the servers and make people follow him?
All three of the Twitter founders, of course, are on there, and they all kind of have different personalities. Biz Stone is funnier is the funniest of the three. Jack Dorsey, who actually did like the original programming and design of what Twitter is something of a dreamer, and you'll see him talking about walking in the rain and you know, wandering the streets, and he's probably the dreamiest of them.
Ooh. All right, well, it's a couple of minutes before the top of the hour, so we're going to break with a little station business here, but we'll be right back with more Technology Bites and Barrett Time after the top of the hour. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Not Ev.